This podcast is a part of CGN Media, a podcast network that points to Christ. We are supported by listeners like you. To help us create more great shows, visit cgnmedia.org/support.
Hey, we wanted to share some recent content with you from our When She Leads conference, where our theme was Breaking New Ground, taken from Hosea 10:12. Here is one of our main sessions.
Well, this is fun because usually I'm making fun of Kelly. I usually get to introduce Kelly, and that's a lot of fun to be on this team with these wonderful ladies. So we love having you here. This is a real treat, and I just thought, oh my goodness, like I just want to take it all in. This is something I love doing, and I love gathering with all of you. And just last night, they were like, can you all please leave? And we were like, no, we hung out here till pretty late. It was fun, and we just enjoy being together, and we enjoy having all of you here. So just like Kelly was saying, I do love teaching, and my message is called Jesus, Friend of Sinners. Jesus is just someone that we all love in this room, isn't he? Jesus, Friend of Sinners. I feel like just in sharing this message, I wanted to talk about the mission of the church, the purpose, and who our God is, and also our mission and who we are, that we wouldn't forget these things. It sounds kind of basic, but I think with time, we just go on and we forget. We do our church thing, and we just seem to sometimes forget those basic things. And so the recent movie, Jesus Revolution, I wonder if any of you saw it, probably a lot of you. Yeah, a lot of us, we rented a theater in town and a lot of us went and saw it together. So in watching that movie, it was really touching for me to see our history as a church, as a Calvary Chapel, to see our roots and to see where we come from. And it was such a good reminder. And what really just so many parts of that movie really touched me. And so what really just hit me is seeing the rebellion in those teens, the hippies who were just fighting against the norm in society. And really they were searching for significance. They were really wanting to know their own way. And that's what I think our teenagers do. They want to find out who they are, what's their purpose in life, and they want to do something. They want to have significance. They want their life to mean something, don't they? They're really no different than us. They're just in a younger age, more immature than us. But you know, I think what we watched in that movie was really moving, that these hippies being so different and rebelling against the norms in their society, that Jesus saw value in them and they got saved, and then God used them in mighty ways. And so what I also loved in that movie is seeing how that church that Pastor Chuck Smith was at was just like I was talking about, where they had kind of forgotten their purpose, their mission. And they were kind of stuffy, you know, they really had ownership of that building and of their pastor and their church. And, you know, the hippies were coming in and they're like, oh, these dirty, smelly people, these homeless people. And they were like shocked that they're barefoot and things like that. And so I feel like that is really common. That's just not that time, those people. But that is just the tendency of people, isn't it? To just forget, to get really comfortable. And then some hippies come along and they made them really uncomfortable in the movie. Did you see that? They were like, oh my goodness, they were really shaken up. But you know, I thought about that too as I watched the movie. This is really good to get shaken up sometimes, isn't it? Because we are comfortable a lot. We like people who are just like us. We like to be in places where it's predictable. We know what's happening. We know the people there. And then, you know, some dirty homeless people come in and you're like, no, that's not who we are. That's not what we want here. And you try to protect what you have, just like in that movie. And I think it's good for us to remember Mark 2:17, the mission of the church. It is what Jesus said. It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. And that is what Jesus came on earth to do, isn't it? It's okay that we get uncomfortable sometimes. It's okay that we get shaken up and that we need to remember that this is not our hangout. That's not what God left us here to do, is make a place for us to hang out and be with people who are just like us. Church is a hospital for the hurt, and church is a hospital for the sick, isn't it? And we should make a way for people who are different and make a way for the hurting, shouldn't we? That's who I want to be to the hurting and to the people who just are crushed in this world, who need Jesus. And we shouldn't forget that our mission is for the lost, isn't it? And so Jesus is the only one who can bring these different people together, isn't he? He can take a traditional man like Pastor Chuck Smith and make him family with a homeless hippie. I love that. The only Jesus does things like that, where he brings us all together, so different as we are, and makes us one body. And I love being a part of a church like that, where we are all different and unique in our own ways, but yet we are one. And so I wanted to tell you just one of the most beautiful passages too. Let's talk about who our God is. Our God is describing himself in Exodus 34. That's the story where Moses is like, I want to see you. And God's like, no, you can't, you'll die. And so, you know, you just can't live if you see me. So he says, what I'll do for you is put you in a little cleft and cover you up as I go by, and you can see my back as I walk away. And as God walked past him, he declared his name. And it's a beautiful passage in Exodus 34, 6. And as the Lord is walking away, he says, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. That is who our God is. Abounding in love and faithfulness, compassionate and gracious. He reveals himself to us in so many ways. In Isaiah 40, I love the passage where he talks about in verse 11 that he is a shepherd and he carries the young close to his heart and he gently leads those who have young. He's gentle with us, isn't he? I love the passage in Isaiah 42, 3. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. That passage is so intriguing to me because it's telling us about our God who, when our zeal is low, when we are hurt, when we struggle, he doesn't say, enough with you, you're not zealous enough for me. You're not doing it well enough, you're not good right now. And he does not ever toss us aside. He's gentle when we hurt. He's gentle when we suffer. He's gentle when we struggle and our zeal is low. And he doesn't ever snuff us out. He encourages us and fans our flame, doesn't he? So I love all these descriptions of our God. In John 1:14, we read how he became flesh and walked among us. The glory of God, he sent it to earth in his Son and let him walk amongst us. He let us experience his glory walking around on the earth. His glory walked amongst the people of Israel, and he touched them, he healed them, he set them free. And in Isaiah 61, that's where Jesus reads his mission. In Luke 4, he goes to this passage in scripture and he reads from Luke 61, 1. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. We are for the display of his splendor. And that's how Jesus starts off, and he reads this passage in the synagogue to say that this is who I am. And then he says in verse 20, Luke 4:21, today this is fulfilled in your hearing, because he said, I'm here now. All that's been described about me in the Old Testament, it's now here, walking amongst you. And Jesus tells them his mission, that he's here to free the captives. He's here to bring good news. And this good news is our gospel message, the gospel of where he does it all with his grace and his love for us. He has seen in the Old Testament our struggle, that we just don't follow him the way that we should. We don't do the things that we should. We just are incapable. And he says, I see that, and I'm here to do it for you, and then to give it to you for free. And that's the message of who Jesus is, where he loves us, and we are sinners. He loves the sinners. Jesus, the friend of sinners. In Luke 15, here are three stories in this passage that talk about who or how God values people. Who are we to him? In the first story, it's well known to us in the parable of the lost sheep in Luke 15. So we see in this passage in verse 4 that he leaves the 99 in the open field and goes after the lost sheep until he finds it. The one person has so much value in God's sight that he sends the one, or he goes after the one who's lost, and he just leaves the 99. They need to understand that this is important, that they're all together, and he's going to go after his lost sheep. That's how much value each sheep has to him. He doesn't want one to be lost, and they won't be lost in his care, and he doesn't give up until they are found. That is the value to him of his sheep. The next story is about the lost coin, and we see in the lost coin that there's a woman who has lost one of her coins, and she stops what she's doing. She searches carefully until she finds it. And she's so excited for this one lost one, that she stopped everything to go after it. And when she finds it, she rejoices. And I love that. That is the value of us in the Lord's sight, that each of us has so much value that he stops what he's doing and doesn't stop searching for us until we are found and where we are, and until we are where we are supposed to be. And that is the value we have in his sight. And so what's interesting is if you go back to verse 1, it says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him, to hear Jesus. In this passage, it's so interesting that you would think it's, you know, his disciples who love him, who know him, who follow him everywhere he goes, and, you know, maybe some people who are religious or something like this are gathered around to hear what Jesus has to say. But who we see gathered around Jesus are sinners, tax collectors. Tax collectors were like the worst in that day. They were kind of hypocrites in a way. They had turned against their own people to work for the Roman government for their benefit. They were just hated by the people because they stole from them, they abused them, and they just felt freedom to do whatever they wanted to and to get rich and enjoy their powerful position over the people. And so they were not well liked. But do you know who they enjoyed gathering around? They enjoyed gathering around Jesus. The tax collectors, the worst of society, wanted to go to Jesus and hear what he had to say. And when I read that, it just strikes me. It strikes me how people gravitate to the one that they know loves them. And Jesus, then, is just this confusing person, because you would think he wants to be in the temple and with, you know, holy, let's quote that, holy people. Just, they have this expectation. Jesus, you say you're a teacher and you come from God. Well, you should be doing these things that we expect you to do. But Jesus was never like that, was he? He's the unexpected. And Jesus, instead, is always hanging out with sinners, and he confused the religious for that. In verse 2, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. They're like flabbergasted. What is this man? They never understand Jesus. These religious folk just never seemed to get it. And they say, you know, he hangs out with sinners and welcomes them. And they're always asking, do you really know who they are? Do you know who this woman is who you're letting touch you? What is he doing? And what they don't realize is that sinners love Jesus because they feel his love for them. And Jesus never condemns them. He's gentle with them. And then these religious people might say, well, but if you're hanging out with sinners, there's something wrong with you. You're like compromising the truth. You're doing something, you know, that these people are the ones you choose to hang out with. There's something wrong with you. And what we have to realize is that Jesus never compromised truth, did he? In fact, he taught the Sermon on the Mount at the beginning of his ministry. And what we know about, we're doing Sermon on the Mount in our women's Bible study. What we know is that this is the most strict of all religious teachings. This Sermon on the Mount is saying, you thought God said this, and this is the bar, you know, the law of the Old Testament. Well, I'm calling you to even this, a higher bar. I expect your heart to be devoted to me. I expect not just your heart, but your motive to be right. I expect more than just your outward actions to be right. And so the Pharisees were hanging out at that low bar thinking that they're pleasing God. And Jesus is saying to them all the time that you're hypocrites. You have it all wrong. You miss the point of the law, he said to them in Matthew 23. You miss the point that it's all about God's mercy and love and favor towards us. And so they never understood Jesus. And these religious people were saying, he just hangs out with sinners and eats with them. There's obviously something wrong with Jesus. And so what they never understood is how Jesus is both full of love and full of truth. He embodied it. In John 1:14, Jesus comes from the Father, it says, full of grace and truth. He's full of love. And he never compromised the truth. He taught the most strictest of all teachings and had the highest of expectation, but he did it in such a way that the sinners even wanted to come to him. And I would even just say that there's this quote that just challenges me. I feel like we need to be challenged and we need to understand what our Jesus is like and how does he do this? John Stott says, our love grows soft if it is not strengthened by truth, and our truth grows hard if it is not softened by love. Is your truth softened by love? When you communicate truth, is it softened by love? And in Proverbs 3:3, it says, do not let kindness and truth leave you. They're both equally important. So hard to balance, but we see it in our Lord Jesus, don't we? That the sinners felt it, and they came to him to hear him teach truth. And I ask, in your churches, do sinners come to hear truth? Do they feel love? Do they want to come in and hear what Jesus has to say at your churches? Do you have people coming to you wanting to know who you are? And what truth you're holding? What is this going on? You're so nice, you're kind. What is this all about that you're doing all the time, going to that church? Do sinners have a gravitation towards you? Do you talk to sinners? Do you surround yourself with church people? Or do you go and talk to sinners just for the fact of listening to them and loving them? And what about this current generation? I'm gonna cry if I talk about this. What about the lost in this world right now? Back in that movie, in the Jesus Revolution, it was the hippies, right? They were rebelling, but they were hurt, weren't they? They were lost. And what did they find? A Jesus who loved them, who accepted them as they are. And something changed in those churches. They went from being traditional to being what we have today, where it's people who are hippies, and people who want to stay traditional, sitting side by side, arms around each other. I love what we have. And I don't want us to forget our mission and who our God is. Our current generation is so lost. They are the most unchurched generation yet to be in America, the most unchurched. Their parents walked away from the church, and now they're not raising their children in the church. These kids have not been around Bible teaching. They don't know Jesus. And they're super lost. Their definition of love has become so twisted. They say, if you want to love me, if you want to love me, you affirm me. You agree with me. And that's how they measure your love for them. And it's become so twisted, hasn't it? Because that's not what the Bible teaches. God's love is very different. It's sacrificial. It's giving of everything he has. And Jesus truly embodied that love where the sinners came to him. They felt it. Somehow they felt it, that this man loves me. And I want our current generation, our kids, to know that love. They're so lost and they're doing these things that just hurt themselves. There's such a rise, as Mary Ellen's going to tell us, there's such a rise in anxiety. Therapy sessions, all therapists are so booked, you can't even get in. There's such a rise in depression and people just hurting themselves. They're so lost. And what they really need is Jesus, but they don't know that. They don't know his name. They don't know. And they should be able to walk into our churches to hear Jesus talk, right? They should be able to come. But they're afraid. And what I want to say is that this current LGBT community, maybe those are the hippies of our day. Maybe those are the lost right now who are hurting, who just need to find Jesus. They need to come and find a place where they are loved and accepted, just as those hippies were. And truly, that's what they're searching for. I have some teenagers in public school who tell me a lot. And you know, their schools have these clubs for kids. And just a little story is that my daughter, she's told me about just a couple of her friends who've from girls have become boys and joined this club and things like this are going on. And we talk about it. And she said, there's this kid who's always been mean. He threw a chair at her once in class. And I asked her on occasion, what's going on with the boy who threw a chair at you? And she said, well, he joined the LGBT club at school. And I thought, really? Wants to be a girl? And she said, Mom, that's not what that club is about. Do you know what that club is about? It's about them being accepted. And those kids who are not accepted by anyone else, that kid's mean and no one wants to sit with him at lunch. But do you know who accepted him is that club? And it rocked me to the bottom of just who I am in my heart. And I thought, if the lost are joining the LGBT crowd because they accept you and love you, why are they not coming to our churches where there's truth and true love and acceptance for who they are? We want these people to know that this is where you should come. This is where you come for love and acceptance and forgiveness of sin. And this should be the place where they can walk into our doors and sit in our chairs and be loved on, right? That we should be able to have a conversation with them to show them that we care. Not a conversation to just convert them, but a conversation to listen to them and to their hurt and to their pain, to hear their story and why are they the way they are. And just to listen. I think that's what we should do. Listen. Listen more than we talk and let them know who Jesus is. Jesus is in us. Let us shine that light in our hurting world, to our hurting kids, and to our hurting communities. A statistic that blows my mind says that 80%, and some say up to 90, you know, this statistic is hard to measure, 80% of the LGBT community grew up in churches. That shocks me. 80% of them. And they've left the church, and they found a place where they are accepted. And we can talk a lot more about this topic. This is a whole separate thing on its own. But there's more statistics out there. There's one that says, 4% of people are out, and they are out publicly about their attractions to the opposite sex and their gender confusion. But yet, there's 3 to 4 more percent of people who are hiding it. And if you do some math and just think about that, that means that 4 out of 100 people struggle with same-sex attraction who sit in our churches. Our children, our teenagers who grow up, they feel this attraction and they're told that they're going to hell. And they see messages. You know, the news loves to portray the worst of us, right? Signs that people hold up, God hates gays. You're going to hell. And they say, well, they certainly won't accept me here. I'm just going to leave. And they leave. And they don't find love. They don't find people who want to come around them and listen to them and support them. Because just because they have a same-sex attraction doesn't mean they want to act on it. They want to please the Lord. They're not going to sin if they have a temptation. They're not going to sin and act on something that they feel. I think a lot of us are like that. We have feelings, like I want to go and do something and feel like I want to do whatever XYZ that is, but that doesn't mean I'm going to actually do it. These kids struggle. These people struggle, and they sit in our pews, and yet they leave after a time when they keep hearing that you're going to hell, and they don't feel like they can talk to someone. They just feel condemned. And I feel like with this current generation, they're like the hippies. And we need to put our arms around them and help them. We need to let people know they can come here for acceptance. You are accepted here for who you are. We love you. And we don't compromise on truth. We still love you for who you are. And that's someone that we should be. Someone who can be like Jesus in John 1:14, that we love people. We are full of grace and truth at the same time. Preston Sprinkle is someone that wrote a book, People to be Loved. We have a book recommendation, a resource list that you can pick up. And Preston Sprinkle wrote a book called People to be Loved. And just in reading that book, that's the message. These are hurting people. These are hurting people, and we need to love them, not condemn them, not turn up our nose, not say, oh, you know, just like where when the hippies came into the church. We don't treat them that way. We love them. How did Jesus treat sinners? In John chapter 8, we see that there was a woman caught in adultery who was brought to Jesus. And how did Jesus treat her? He didn't condemn her. At the end, he said, go and sin no more. I'm not condemning you. Just stop sinning because it hurts yourself. That's not the way you are created to be. They need to know their purpose, that they were created for a purpose. Their bodies are designed for a reason. And our young need to hear that. There is purpose in who they are and how they are made. Can we be people like Jesus, where he taught them truth? And in, I love this, in John 8:36, that sets them free. Jesus's message set people free from the burden of sin and shame. And that's what we need to be doing, is giving this message that frees people from sin and shame. I want to be set free. I want to be free from my sin, from what I do, and not hang my head in shame, but just know who my Jesus is, that I'm forgiven. And these kids need that message too. The lost in our world need to know the mission of our church, the mission that we have in our calling, and the way that we are to be like Jesus, that they can be set free. And we are just really beautifully set free, as Jesus said in Isaiah 61, where he came to set us free, to bring us out of darkness into light. He set us free. He released the prisoners, didn't he? And that's what he did for us. He brought us good news so that we can be people who are free, proclaiming this good news to our current generation, right? So let us be people that do that and who can be like Jesus to combine those two and be full of grace and truth.
Well, thanks for joining us today. We hope you find this content helpful. Hey, stay connected with us on Instagram and Facebook for all that is going on. We'll see you next time.